This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
In 2016, Melissa and Fred Platt experienced horrific personal tragedy when their 15-and-a-half-month-old son, Sam, passed away. He had spent his entire life in hospital, having never gone outside, except for transfers between hospitals. They decided to turn his heartbreak in a way to touch the lives of others in difficult circumstances and founded Footprints for Sam. The impact within the pediatric healthcare system has been phenomenal. I'm delighted to have Melissa as my guest now to tell me more. Melissa, welcome and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. It's so lovely to be here.
Melissa, tell me a little bit about Sam.
Gosh, where to start? So, you know, Sam was just the most beautiful little boy. And when I fell pregnant, it was just such a gift. We had met my husband and I later in life and originally thought we would have to go through, and we did go through the in vitro journey unsuccessfully. Kind of gave up on that, and then he was our little miracle. And the journey sadly wasn't what we had thought it would be. It didn't have the typical, I guess, where you have the birth and wonderful time with your child. I just always knew that there was something a little bit wrong. And I think that's where the journey started, in learning about one's voice and saying to parents, if you think there's something wrong, trust your gut. And have a say, have a voice, even if nobody's listening. Anyway, we kind of had our last hurrah in Cape Town, and we're going there for a friend's wedding. My husband was running two oceans, and I started having early contractions. And Fred said to me, I'm sure it's a spaghetti bolognese you ate. And I said, no, I really don't think it is. So we went to the hospital, and that was the first time they picked up that there was something wrong with the pregnancy, and there was a halo around Sam's head. So I then spent the next few days in hospital. So my birthday, the wedding, none of that was particularly lovely. Ended up then going back to Johannesburg and literally straight into hospital. And I remember at that time thinking, everything's going to be fine. It's just require bed rest and we'll go from there. But then when our file literally came back with red stamps all over it and they said, be prepared, you're going to meet your son today, we realized that this was going to be an unusual and sadly heartbreaking journey. But we always trusted that everything would be okay. And, you know, in the end of it, we lost our precious son. And, you know, but through it all, Sam was just the most incredible little boy. He spoke with his eyes because he was on a ventilator for most of his journey with the ET tube, which is this long pipe through his nose, through just about above his lungs. And so his face was always strapped to keep the tube in place, and it was always very difficult to hold him. But every time I did get to hold him, every time I did get to just be with him, was such a blessing. And he was a little boy who's, because he spoke with his eyes, everybody said, never look into Sam's eyes, because if you do, you're going to fall in love. They were beautiful, big and blue. And he just had a way about him that was incredibly special, because he was limited to a bed in a hospital for 15 and a half months.
Melissa, you say you knew and you went, your instincts were right, and to tell people to listen to your instincts. And from what I understand, Sam's condition was misdiagnosed for a long period of time.
That's right.
To what extent do you feel like, did you know, were you listening to your instincts, or were you completely and totally guided by professionals?
I think this is the debate, and this is a lot where our trust, in terms of not trust and having trust, but our trust, our charitable trust, has gone in terms of trusting your voice, having a say, but also understanding that health professionals are simply human beings with knowledge, but they don't have all the knowledge. And there's that gut sense that one has to trust. And then also to remember that in healthcare, and this is one of our big advocacy messages, is we need to have a team, especially when a chronic condition is there, because not one person has all the answers. And we were in a private institution. We had a very privileged journey in effect, and yet I particularly felt unheard and unseen. Literally, stay in the corner and just do as you're told. And that was just heartbreaking.
And I think probably most heartbreaking at all is that they had finally identified what it was.
Mm.
And he was getting better.
Yeah, exactly. So he was only diagnosed, he was diagnosed with central core disease when he was 13 and a half months after we moved him to a hospital in Cape Town. He was diagnosed at Red Cross Children's Hospital. And it was a rare muscle myopathy, but something that some people live without even knowing they've got it, you know, weak muscles. Obviously, because of his circumstances being so premature, his lungs, all of his organs not being fully developed, then being tired in the bed and having this rare muscle myopathy, you can imagine what that does to one's muscle mass. And he was really restricted as a result. So not getting a diagnosis early can really impact on patient outcomes. And certainly with us, it meant that Sam got repeated nosocomial infections, which is a hospital-acquired infection, and then died as a result of sepsis, not as a result of what he had.
Oh, it's absolutely heartbreaking. How do you turn that heartbreak and what I imagine must have been huge anger into something positive as you have done?
So funny that you say anger. And I always smile when you know, we talk about grief and loss and everyone thinks about the stages of grief. And that was one of the really frustrating parts of our earlier journey for those first 13 months where the doctors kept saying to us, Fred, you're in the angry phase, and Melissa, you're in the denial phase, which was just so condescending.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It was shocking. So when he died, I think there was anger, but at the same time, I think you're just so heartbroken that the anger comes later. That shock was just devastating. I remember walking out. He died at Red Cross Children's Hospital. And I remember walking out, and sorry for the listeners as they listen to this, but I almost felt like, because the world carries on. We were in an ICU. They were about to move into a new ICU, so it was a little bit chaotic. And they tried to give us as much privacy as they could, but it really wasn't possible. And as I walked out, I just felt something needs to happen. Something major needs to happen to recognize that my son has died. And I remember just falling on the floor and thinking, what am I doing? But it was just, I think my body just saying, this isn't okay. This is not okay. And, you know, my precious son, who we just fought for so long, has died. And it was devastating. From an angry point, I don't think I ever got that angry. My husband was furious. He definitely was in the angry phase after Sam died because it was just so mismanaged, and he could have lived well.
So we are going to talk about the charities probably after the break, but before we go into... Oh, I think I've lost my train of thought there.
It's okay.
What I wanted to ask is, the 15 months
yes.
must have been very traumatic as well, because anybody who knows, anybody's been in hospital, it's a full time.
Yes.
It must have taken all your time for 15 months. You must have had very little outside of that.
Absolutely. And again, that was part of the privileged journey, was that I had at that point gone on my own. I was becoming a coach, or had already qualified at that point. And my husband could be the breadwinner, so I could be at his bedside. And, you know, you don't realize how draining it is. I remember all the parents coming in and out, and literally we were the ones that were there on and on and on and on, and our journey just never seemed to end.
Okay, we're going to take the break. When we come back, we're going to look at Footprints for Sam.
Perfect.
This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 High FM.
And I am talking to Melissa Platt, and we are talking about Sam's footprints. Melissa, how did you begin Sam's footprints?
So Footprints for Sam...
Oh, sorry.
No. They are his footprints, so it's totally perfect. So Sam... You know, I mentioned a bit about our own journey being quite privileged, but emotionally devastating. And when Sam got suddenly very, very sick, we had to move him to Red Cross Children's Hospital, which, because they needed to do dialysis. And unfortunately, they couldn't do dialysis because so much had gone wrong in those initial 13 months. And I just noticed that at Red Cross, which is the most amazing world-class facility, that so many children were alone. And looking at it through a privileged lens, I thought, where are their parents? I mean, why would you leave your sick child alone? And then realizing, honestly, I was just being completely selfish in that observation, that so many families couldn't be there because they didn't have transport money. They had three other children to look after, or they didn't have, you know, leave to come. And we just thought, this can't happen, especially if a child dies and they're alone, or a parent is with a child who dies and then has to get back into a crammed taxi to go home. So my husband and I, after Sam died, just needed to get away. And we did a few things. And one day we were on our way to the Kruger Park, and Fred said to me, "We have 150,000 Rand to start a charity." Huh. One of his investors had contacted him and said, "I want to support you." So I said, "Well, that's amazing. What do we need to do?" And he said, "Well, we need to put a proposal together and a structure." And all I had was a serviette. And we wrote down our main observations that we thought those were the missing elements in the journey of those that are underprivileged. And on top of that list was transport, because of what I've just shared with you. So we started with transport, taking children from the townships to their hospital appointments. So those are stable children. It's not a taxi, it's not an ambulance, it's a VIP service. Especially, as you can imagine, if you had a transplant or anything, chronic condition, you need to have those regular appointments. During COVID, we helped with medication runs and things like that. Then secondly, food. Because often people would be sitting at the bedside and have no food, or be going home to no food, no toiletries. So we do massive bucket runs every year. I think we're probably topping at over 200,000 meals that we've done since inception. And the transport as well, thousands of children, over 13,000 passengers. And that's a maximum of 7 people in the vehicle at the time. So lots of kilometers, lots of lives changed and dignity along the way. And then we looked at spaces, because when Sam died, as I said, there was nowhere for me to sit to say goodbye. All of our really horrid conversations with the doctors breaking bad news were across the bed with Sam. It's just not appropriate. So we looked at, how do we create spaces such as counseling rooms, places where people can say goodbye to their loved ones without being rushed, and just beautiful spaces for health professionals, because it's emotionally draining for them as well. Tea rooms, breastfeeding rooms for mothers, all of the areas that are just not thought of. And then making wards, especially in government hospitals, beautiful, that you walk in and you don't think, "Oh my goodness, I'm going to die in this place because of the lack of resources," but the incredible academic staff. So really bringing that together in a beautiful way. And then Wi-Fi communication. So many patients sit there and just have no money to communicate. And then lastly, well, the advocacy, so having beautiful conversations with very special people like you and sharing our message to say, how do we make sure that there's humanity in medicine, and that humanity is recognized on both sides of the stethoscope? And for me, I think that's why the anger wasn't there, was I studied palliative medicine shortly after Sam died and learned about compassion fatigue and burnout and moral injury, and realized that's what happened. It wasn't that they didn't care. It's just that they had lost their way a bit along the way and weren't reaching out to other health professionals to support them. And sadly, that's what happened with Sam. If we'd had a second opinion, I believe he might well have lived and lived well.
Sure. It's so incredibly powerful, Melissa. We have to end in a minute. But okay, Before we do, what would you like our listeners to do? What kind of steps, what role do we have?
Well, we've got an amazing angels program that's headed by our head angel, Jo Giles. So to visit our website and contact us, all the contact details are there. Footprints for Sam with a 4, footprintsforsam.org. And, you know, just to really give a thought to our 6 key initiatives. I know I haven't had a chance to go in detail, but thank you for the time. They can see all the detail on the website, listen to some of the stories that we've shared, and see how they'd like to get involved, whether by donation or volunteering, whatever it is that speaks to their heart.
Perfect. So that is, and I know you can also knit and create things and donate toys. So there's a lot to you can do, but I do recommend you get in touch with Footprints for Sam on their website. And just to say thank you, Melissa, for sharing your story. It's courageous and inspirational. So thank you very much for that.
Really appreciate the time.
And indeed, thank you to all of you for joining me. Thanks to Craig and Makundi for putting the show together. If there's anything you'd like to comment on, you're welcome to send me an email on charisse@shabd.org. Otherwise, until next week, I wish you all Shabbat Shalom.